From Directions Magazine, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, October 22nd, 2013. This weekly podcast brings you the latest information on geospatial technology and all things location. This is Joe Francisca, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
And this is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
Sensors. We have them on our phone. They're mounted on our electrical meters. They are in our cars, and we might be wearing them soon. So how is sensor technology impacting geospatial information? We'll discuss this and more, but first, a word from our sponsor.
Directions Magazine is the leader in geospatial technology webinars. If your organization is interested in more sales leads, stronger brand awareness, and positioning your company as a key thought leader, then let us help you deliver a professionally produced live event that reaches a global audience. For more information on both our 30 and 60-minute webinar formats, go to www.geospatialwebinars.com.
Adina, what fascinates me about sensor technology is the fact that we're really nearly at the cusp, I think, of something incredible and incredibly useful, and perhaps even underappreciated, at least for now. We have all used sensor technology. Obviously, our phones are a sensor, but there are many other types of sensors with which we're familiar on a personal level. We have smoke detectors in our homes. Many of us have installed the additional radon detectors. We drive cars with sensors and devices, and we come in contact with many types of sensors every day. But today, I think we want to talk about those that might impact geospatial technology. Before we go into that, we need to mention that the Open Geospatial Consortium, of course, is very much into sensors. They've established the Sensor Model Language Encoding Standards, otherwise known as Sensor ML, which specifies the models and XML encoding that provides a framework with which, and I quote, the geometric, dynamic, and observational characteristics of sensors and sensor systems can be defined. And within the Sensor ML, they have the sensor web enablement standards that are part of their other standards suites. The OGC goes on to say that the sensor technology, the computer technology, and network technology are advancing together while demand grows for ways to connect information systems with the real world. And that's essentially really what we want to talk about here today, is how are sensors impacting us in the real world and how are we collecting the data. So let's begin, Adina. What sensors are on your radar screen and how might they impact geospatial information?
Okay, well, the sensors that are most interesting to me right now are all of the ones related to diagnosis of disease. Because now we're at a point where you can take a little bit of blood, put it on a piece of paper, do an analysis that way, or have a sensor attached to a cell phone that decides yes or no you have malaria. And because that cell phone is part of a network, that data can be uploaded along with its location to a big data store, and you can track it that way. And for me, this is just a huge leap. I was in South Africa in 1995 looking at the continued existence of malaria in that country. And it was so low-tech then that the folks who were involved with it would ride around on bicycles. Mm-hmm. They would go to a home, and they would take the blood tests, and they would GPS locate the house by writing down the coordinates on a piece of paper. That was somewhat cultural. Then they would bike back to the lab, where it took some time to process the sample to see if the people in the home did in fact have malaria. And then they'd have to go back to work on the treatment part.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so then there was not a great database of all of this information. Well, now, again, with appropriate training and cultural sensitivity to how things work, so much of that could be done, you know, in minutes right on site.
Right.
And that is going to change how we deal with any kind of infectious disease, which I think is just mind-boggling. And I think we're really right at the beginning of figuring out how to do this. I mean, we've got some of the hardware. We've got some of the structures in place, sort of the cultural, societal things in place, but this is going to have a huge impact on how we manage infectious disease.
Yeah, it sounds fascinating, and yet I can also see the red flags being raised about privacy concerns. You want to upload your data, you want to get information about the location, but you also want to protect the privacy of the individual and how we anonymize some of that data, although incredibly useful, I think will come into play.
Right, and again, I think the other level here is it's very different if you're in KwaZulu-Natal up in the north where everybody is living in rondavels, and right. You know, it's a different way of life than the kinds of worries that we might have here. And again, how do you explain about the privacy and who's collecting the data and what they're going to do with it and how you as an individual might be treated? There's a lot of things that need to come together for this to work, absolutely.
One of the examples I want to bring up, and I'm going to geek out here for a second, is hyperspectral imaging. The way I would define hyperspectral is using very, very narrow bands of the electromagnetic spectrum. By comparison, some of the original Landsat multispectral scanner data was about 100 nanometers in width. We're now seeing Landsat 8 imager data in the 20 to 30 nanometer range of the visible in the near infrared. So what does this mean? Well, it means that the variations in reflected sunlight, the kind that can tell a diseased Doug fir tree from a healthy one, is radically improved, and therein would support forest disease manifestations, environmental monitoring, mineral exploration, the kind of things that I was doing back in my graduate school career. What I see happening is some of these hyperspectral devices being now mounted on unmanned aerial vehicles and has the potential to really improve the frequency of being able to monitor things. But also, we've got now the software that can analyze these data. We'll have improved visualization techniques to spot these variations on a more regular basis. And I just see the whole application of hyperspectral data being benefited by UAVs and new sensor analysis techniques. So I want to see this coming. I could see it coming. I don't see it yet, but I think it's going to be there soon.
Well, and what you said actually brings up a lot of ideas that are sort of changing in how we think about sensors. The technology itself, and if you think of, you know, what a sensor is, I actually went and got a definition because I wanted to make sure I understood what a sensor is. A sensor is a device that detects or measures a physical property and records, indicates, or otherwise responds to it. And that's a pretty nice, generic, broad sort of definition. But what's happening now is those sensors are getting smaller. They're getting mobile in the sense that they can be in a phone or on a UAV. They're getting cheaper. So if you need a whole bunch of them, you might be able to get them for pennies to dollars a piece, depending on what it is you're doing and what kinds of sensors they are. So much of what's changing about sensors is about how they're made, how cheaply they're made, how small they are, and on what platforms we're deploying them.
Yeah. The deployability aspect is really fascinating because, as you said, the smaller they get, the more widely they can be deployed.
Yeah, and actually the next example I want to give, I actually heard about over the weekend on NPR. They're looking at heat islands in the city of Portland, Oregon, and pollution and such. So one of the studies that was done was they got some sort of pollution detectors and they zip-tied them to different locations across the city, including trees and elsewhere. Then they went back a few days later and collected them up and mapped it and made a heat map of the data. And this all sounded like such a everyday kind of thing that you could do. That's really sort of interesting. The other thing that I think is really interesting, again, as we sort of juxtapose our understanding of sensors, is at one time, when you said sensor, the geospatial marketplace, you're talking about a sensor that was on a satellite capturing data about some large area of the Earth. And now what we have are these sort of pinpoint, almost disposable sensors that we can tack up to a location where we want to grab information and then grab the data off of them and then throw them in the trash.
Right. Well, and there was a lot of news several years ago about RFID chips, putting RFIDs in packaged goods, on pallets. That kind of has died down for a bit, although they're still used quite a lot. I'm not sure we ever got the location technology tied to the RFID sensors as quite as well as was predicted, but it's one of those things that's ongoing and it's in the background there. The one thing I wanted to talk about, I'm going to go from geek to more mundane, I'll give you an example. This past weekend, I was driving to South Bend, Indiana to watch the Notre Dame Southern Cal game, and I had a tire pressure idiot light go on in my car. Now, my car is a 2010 model, and I thought it would be smart enough to tell me which tire is low. My wife drives a car that's a 2011 Buick, and she has gauges that actually will tell you that it's the right front tire that's going low, and they'll tell you the actual tire pressure. So I was a little bit disappointed that as I'm flipping through all the dials in my car, I couldn't exactly tell which tire was low, and I ended up going to a gas station and filling all of the tires. But what I'd love to see happen is I want you to tell me the tire pressure, just like my wife's car does, but I also want you to tie it to my navigation system so that you can tell me where the nearest gas station is and that has an air pressure refilling station.
Well, and it's not really mundane, because what you're really talking about, and this is actually the last thing I want to bring up, are the same issues that Robert Scoble and Shel Israel brought up in their new book, The Age of Context. And if you're not sure who those two guys are, they were going to give the keynote at the GeoInt conference, which was postponed until the spring. And their book, The Age of Context, is really about how five technologies are coming together to sort of change everything. And the five technologies will sound very familiar to anybody who's involved in location technology. They include mobile, social, big data, location, and sensors. Okay, and what they're sort of arguing about is when you put all of those things together, you get really valuable information. And what you're just suggesting in your situation was those things did not come together.
Right, no.
Right, the sensor and the location didn't come together. Certainly, it is possible that if your car didn't have all of the information or a way to communicate with you, it could have sent a message to your phone that said, hey, we couldn't fit this on the screen in the car, but here's all the details you need about your low pressure issue on the right front tire of your car. They could certainly have tied this into a social network, so in a sense, phoned ahead or left a message with your son that you're visiting and said, hey, your parents' car has low pressure and a tire. It might take them a little longer to get here because they have to stop and get some air. I mean, there's a whole bunch of ways that this can all be pulled together.
Yeah, well, without a doubt. And you would have felt that the car manufacturers, at least the 2010 models and beyond, might have built that in. But as we know, car manufacturing is at least a 5 to 7 year period of time that's necessary to construct the car, build in all the sensors. And I have what I see happening is cars that are being designed today, maybe not built today, but designed, will have a whole slew of sensor technology built into them. The whole idea of the connected car is coming into play fast and furious.
Right. Well, and let's come back, get around full circle. And that's that when you try to connect all of these things, you need some standards so the things all plug together. And that's what the OGC is working on. And right now, if you think about how am I going to connect up the sensor in my car to my GPS, to the big data repository about, you know, the car manufacturer, for example, or the tire manufacturer collects about how the tires are used and abused, and your social network, and your mobile phone, that's a whole lot of connections.
Yeah.
And exactly how to connect them together, which information gets shared, privacy issues, this is very complicated.
The last example I wanted to bring up has to do with an example I'm very personally familiar with. My father-in-law owned a company that manufactured something called a photoionization detector, or a PID lamp. The lamp would be used within devices to detect a variety of potentially dangerous levels of chemicals, such as the volatile organic compounds, the VOCs, or other hydrocarbons, benzene, methyl chloride. And some of these could be found in paints and lacquers, cleaning supplies, pesticides, building materials, you name it. Now, he was pretty successful at what he did. It was all hand-manufactured, and he was supported a lot by the fact that EPA came out with a number of requirements that said, hey, you better monitor for this stuff. What I see happening is the potential to expose a lot of this information, a lot of the sensor information that can be tracked and located and mapped. And certainly, again, on a personal level, we want to be aware of these potentially hazardous chemical compounds. As I mentioned in the opening, people have smoke detectors, but radon detectors as well. And I think, as we've been discussing here, as things get smaller, as we connect these things to the Internet of Things, that we're going to become more aware of some things that are potentially hazardous, And when I was researching this discussion, it brought back all of the things that I remember my father-in-law talking about in his business. I think we're going to be more aware of the types of sensors that are available to us for these potentially dangerous things.
Well, I think our whole grasp and understanding of sensors is changing because we're sensing what's going on in the world, as you just described, for different chemicals and harmful chemicals, certainly, air pollution, temperature, tracking climate change. And then we've got this whole other set of sensors that about ourselves as individuals, right? Quantified self, right? So, you know, where do you go and how much do you eat and how much do you exercise and, you know, what's your heart rate and how many hours did you sleep last night, right? So the scale is changing too. And what I think is very interesting is that when we talk about big data, if you do, in fact, participate in the quantified self movement, which I really do not, you get tons of data about yourself. You can get, you know, your heart rate taken every 15 minutes if you want, right? You get the nature of your sleep every night. I mean, that's a huge database about you.
Right.
And then if you scale that up with everybody who is going to share their, for example, sleep data, How did the country sleep tonight? Was it different in the East and the West? The potential there of looking at these kinds of things is all there. And this whole idea of how it scales, I think, is going to be very interesting and how people take advantage of it.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. From us here at Directions Magazine, don't forget to check out our upcoming webinars about new technology from Intergraph, Google, Esri, and CoreLogic that will be coming up within the next 2 weeks. For more information and to register for one of our webinars, go to directionsmag.com/webinars. If you'd like to comment about our podcast today, you can write to us at editors@directionsmag.com. Leave a comment where this podcast is posted on Directions Mag, or send us a tweet @DirectionsMag. Thanks again for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.